I am going to speak about computing black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity from a new perspective, and this perspective is using techniques of quantum conformative theory. And I say most of this work was, a big part of this work was done while I was visiting the University of Chicago for 3 months, visiting Professor Bob Wolf. And this work has been done in collaboration with Jacobo Diaz-Polo and Enrique Fernandez Borja, also PhD students at the University of Valencia. And some part of what I am going to talk about has been done also in collaboration with Fernando Barbero and Eduardo Villaseñor from Madrid. Then, let me show you the plan of my talk. I will begin review in a very quick way the standard quantity of black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity, and I just want to review quickly because I don't have so much time. Then I just remember the main results and the points that I will use in the rest of my talk. After that, I will show how techniques coming from number theory and combinatorial analysis can be used in order to obtain exact expressions and analytical expressions for the combinatorial problem of black hole entropy in quantum gravity. And once we have these analytical expressions for black hole entropy, I want to try to show how these expressions can be derived from a different perspective, relying on conformative theory techniques. And I will finish with some conclusions and some future perspectives. Then, the actual status of black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity in the isolated horizon framework was established in some papers of Astekar, Baez, Korichi, and Krasnov in 2000. And basically, what they did was compute the geometry in the fashion of loop quantum gravity, but in the presence of an inner boundary in the space-time manifold. And in this framework, the black hole is introduced in an effective way. In particular, the horizon is introduced as an inner boundary in the manifold. And in particular, this inner boundary, the effect of this inner boundary is to establish some boundary conditions. The main condition is that the freedom, the SU2 gauge freedom that we have in the bulk is reduced on the manifold, on the horizon, to a U1 gauge symmetry, and this fact reduces the SU2 connection of the bulk to the U1 connections on the horizon. And already at the classical level, one can look in at the symplectic structure of general relativity of the gravitation. One can see that due to these inner boundary conditions appears a new term in the symplectic structure, which is precisely a term of a U1 Chern-Simons theory. Then the next step is to quantize this framework, and when one quantizes this classical framework, what one obtains is that on the bulk one has the usual loop quantum gravity SU2 spin networks with edges carrying irreducible representation of the HU group labeled by the number J. And these edges intersect the horizon in a finite number of points, which we call punctures. And in these punctures, the J label is projected to a usual spin number M. This is on the horizon, this is on the bulk. On the horizon, we have to quantize the U1 Chern-Simons theory on a puncture sphere. And these degrees of freedom at the quantum level fluctuate independently from the ones of the bulk. And the A labels are labeling the states of this U1 Chern-Simons theory. Then, additionally, now we have to impose boundary conditions, which will relate the bulk degrees of freedom with the horizon degrees of freedom. And these boundary conditions are, first of all, the area condition. We fix an area, which is given by the usual black hole area spectrum of loop quantum gravity, where gamma is the Barbero and Mirchi parameter. The boundary conditions also relate the labels of the horizon degrees of freedom with the labels of the bulk degrees of freedom in this particular way. And additionally, we have to impose an additional condition, which is due to the spherical topology of the horizon. And this is just that the sum of all the A labels has to be equal to zero. And this is the quantum version of the Gauss-Bonnet theorem, and it's usually called the projection constraint. Then, in this framework, the degrees of freedom of the black hole, or the entropy of the black hole, is coming from the degrees of freedom of the theory on the horizon, and then the entropy can be established as the logarithm of n of A, where n is the number of ordered A sequences compatible with these conditions for a fixed value of area A between some interval of tolerance, delta, where delta is of order of the Planck length, something like this. Delta is just, sorry?
Different from 2-1, where you come 2?
Yes, yes, yes. In the process of quantizing, in the framework of Astekar, Corici, Baez, and Krasnov, they need to establish a order in the set of punctures in order to quantize. And then the labels that we have to count had to be ordered.
That's what you count.
Sorry?
What do you count? You count that AI, because here you mentioned J, but M. So AI has to be smaller than 2J. A has to be smaller than 2J.
You just have to count all the sequences of A labels.
Yeah, that satisfy which
verifying one? These conditions. Then exists
A is smaller than J? Because
yes. Smaller or equal. There exist sequences of M labels verifying these conditions. There exist sequences of J labels compatible with these sequences of M labels verifying the area conditions with some intervals of tolerance. And additionally, the projection constraint. This is what you have to count in order to account for the entropy of a black hole. This is just counting the dimensionality of the Hilbert space of the U1 Fessenius theory over the horizon.
Would you take for delta?
Sorry? Delta is a parameter interval tolerance of order of the Planck area. Small interval tolerance. This is you. This is
becomes when you take the logarithm, this becomes just a tiny additional. There's a tiny additional term when you take the logarithm of anything, right? It depends on delta.
So what is the dependence on delta?
Delta is just because when you are computing things in statistical mechanics, you fix the macroscopic value of you want to fix, but you permit some little tolerance in this value. That you fix the entropy.
And the entropy doesn't depend much.
No, doesn't depend. No.
But in the first place, the entropy was calculated without the step, right? I mean, when they calculated it for the first time.
No,
it
wasn't.
Was it that time?
Yes, yes, sure. I will show.
Okay.
Then the next step, historically, was done by Domagala and Lewandowski, and they just take this problem and formulate it in a combinatorial fashion. And what they did basically was trying to use this relation in order to formulate the combinatorial problem in terms of the M levels. And the combinatorial problem that they fixed was the next. The entropy is given by the log of n, where n is given by the number of all the finite arbitrary log ordered sequences of m labels of non-zero half integers, m labels, verifying the projection constraint in terms of the m labels, and additional this area constraint, which are inequality here. The inequality comes from the fact that the m labels are not directly related with area. The labels directly related with area are the J labels. Then given sequences of M labels verifying this inequality, we can be sure that there exists a compatible sequences of J labels verifying the equality of area with some delta interval.
But it's not here though.
The delta interval is just this inequality. Because if you have some the sequences of M labels verifying that this inequality is satisfied, if you permit some delta, you can be sure that there exists some list of J labels with area equal to 8 plus minus delta. If you don't put this delta, you cannot show this inequality.
So in the previous transparency, were you summing over the J's compatible with the area as well? J's and the A's.
J's and the A's, sorry?
A's. J's and A's.
No.
No, J's.
The previous one.
It's an M.
No, in the previous one.
This one?
Yeah. You said area? All the sequences A, but I presume you sum over all the J's that are compatible with the total number of the total area, right?
Yes, you have some punctures. Each of these one has a J ladder. And
but you sum over those J's.
Yes, yes. Over the J's. This,
over
the J of this affine network. J's.
Okay.
This, the J of this affine network, of this one. Each affine network gives a quantum of area given by the its J ladder, and the sum of the all the contributions to the area is the total area.
The number of functions
is finite.
It's finite. So it's fixed or
No. You can you have freedom of say here. Given by all the finite arbitrary long order sequences.
So in order for these things.
Sorry?
The little n is the number of functions. The little n there, you say m went from.
Yes, but arbitrary long. Arbitrary n. Finite, but.
Sorry for this rewriting to be true, you have to choose a specific delta. So which one do you choose?
Delta is a parameter of order of Planck area.
Yeah, but I guess if it's smaller than something, then this theorem is no longer true.
All right, Laurent, this is just like you just calculate the entropy of a system by taking the logarithm of all the states below a certain energy or the states
No, but that's not what I'm. No, because it's, I know that. But that's what he's saying here is that discounting is equivalent to the other one where there's an equality.
Yes.
And in order to do that, you need to choose a specific.
If you choose.
So wait, let's say discounting is equivalent to which counting?
To the Aspekar plan.
With which delta?
With a delta of order of Planck length. A delta
when delta is zero, does it work?
No.
Clearly, if delta is zero, it doesn't work. If delta is 1000, it doesn't work. So,
precisely, delta has to be a little bit bigger than the contribution of one puncture with j equal to 1/2.
Okay.
This is precisely what delta has to be. Bigger than the contribution of one puncture with j equal 1/2.
Mm-hmm.
If you take an delta of this order, you can put this inequality.
This guy doesn't count.
And after all, you are. After all, you are going to the macroscopic IR regime, and this doesn't matter. The result is totally independent of the delta. The next step.
But this question, so you sum over these, you count these and do you have an additional count then compatible J's with that, or?
There is an additional independently counting, this is what you are.
You were talking about that there may be several J's that correspond to this choice of M's, right?
Yes, but the degrees of freedom of the entropy are coming from the horizon, and the horizon levels are M or A, and you don't want to count J levels. There is an additional counting coming from Ghosh and Mitra, and they propose that the counting has to count also J ladders, as you are saying. But this is a different counting. The standard view of the problem is to count just M ladders because the M ladders are related with A ladders, little A ladders, which are the ladders of the Hilbert space of the horizon degrees of freedom. That is what you want to count is the horizon degrees of freedom.
You don't sum up the J's.
You just count the.
You are sum over the J's.
No. You are counting M sequences, not J sequences. But you only need that there exists some one or two or whatever.
But in the
J sequences
scheme,
compatible with the area.
In the first scheme, you do not then sum over the J's. You just sum over the A's with some fixed distribution of J's.
No.
You can. The J's are related with the area by the spectrum of loop quantum gravity. And this is a condition. Then you count the number of M sequences for which there exists a J sequence verifying the area condition. But you count how many M sequences there are.
Okay.
Then the next step to this combinatorial problem was to solve it. And they was doing by Meissner. And Meissner used very beautiful methods, exact methods actually, based on Laplace transforms in order to solve this problem. But even when the metrics were exact, they used some assumptions. And what they obtained was that the number of microstates compatible with a given area, independently of delta, was given by this expression, that in terms of the entropy, when you take logarithm, you obtain a term proportional to the area, with, where this gamma Meissner is just a numerical coefficient coming from the combinatorial problem. And with an additional logarithm correction with minus one half coefficient. And then in the large area regime, this is the leading term, the important term. And if we choose the Barberian Wiltshire parameter equal to this gamma Meissner, we recover the Beckethin-Hopke entropy law for macroscopic black holes. And then in this fashion, everybody was happy. And the next step to this was doing by Corici, Diaz-Polo, and Fernandez Borja 2 years ago. And what they did was to recompute the combinatorial problem, but in this case using what I call brute force analysis. What they did exactly was use a computer to explicitly enumerate each of these M sequences compatible with the macroscopic boundary conditions. But I mean, this was an explicit counting using a computer, counting one per one all the sequences compatible or not. This was in this fashion an exact counting, and was trying to verify if the assumptions done by Meissner were correct or not. And what they found was a surprisingly result that, of course, this explicit counting has limitations, and the limitations is that because the number of microstates grows exponentially with area, you cannot reach very high areas in this way. And they just did this computation for black holes until 100 Planck areas or something like this. But for this black holes, they found this interesting result, and was that the entropy in this range of areas already have this linear growing with area, like Meissner, even with the logarithmic correction with the minus one half coefficient. But in addition to this, superposed to this effect, they found that the entropy grows in discrete steps with this periodic behavior, where the width of these steps is constant and is of order of 2.4 Planck areas, and they call this effect quantum black hole entropy quantization. Then, in this situation, one has to ask some questions, and the natural questions are: is this effect real, or is an artifact of the way of they are counting? If this effect is real, if the entropy loop quantum gravity grows in that way, where is this effect coming from? And the most important, is this effect present for large areas black hole where the isolate horizon approximation is well justified? Then this is the natural question that one has to answer. And in order to answer this one, one has to rederive this effect in an alternative way. And in order to answer the other ones, in particular this one, one has to obtain analytical expressions for the combinatorial problem in order to take an asymptotical expansion. And
black holes isolated horizon approximation is not justifiable
because isolated horizon means that the horizon is in thermal equilibrium, and we know from Hawking that a tiny black hole is emitting radiation very quickly because the temperature is 1/n, and for small masses this is not a thermal equilibrium but black hole. In order to justify the thermal equilibrium, we have to take very high, very big black holes in which the temperature is negligible.
But how big? Can we quantify this?
How big is the horizon? I don't know. How to say? Macroscopic. Obviously not 100 Planck areas. I don't know how to put the limit. Then, in order to answer these questions, the next step was done by myself, Fernando Barbero, Diaz-Polo, Fernández Borja, and Villaseñor. And what they did was using techniques coming from number theory and combinatorial analysis in order to solve this in an explicit way this combinatorial problem. And the problem I'm going to summarize the result. The problem that we want to solve is this combinatorial problem, looking for the number of ordered M sequences, verifying the projection constraint and the area inequality. And the strategy that we follow is the next. First of all, we will look for the numbers of B of ordered M sequences, verifying the projection constraint and the area equality in this case. And then, trivially, just summing for areas smaller or equal than the one considered, we can obtain the number of the real number of sequences that we want. I will call this D degeneracy, and obviously this D contains all the information about the combinatorial problem, because summing for areas smaller or equal than A, we obtain the real number of states. And let me make some definitions. We will units in which this factor 4 pi gamma Planck length is equal to 1. In order to work with integer numbers instead of semi-integers, we define this k level, which is just 2 times the absolute value of m. Then k are related with the absolute value of m. And in terms of k, this equation is this one. And let me define this nk number, which is the number of punctures carrying level k. I mean, how many times the level k appears. And in terms of these n numbers, this equation is just this. And from this, we can say that given a set of nk numbers, or a set of nk numbers, characterize completely sequences of absolute value of m, or what is the same, characterize a sequences of k levels up to reorderings, because the nk levels is just say the k equal to 1 appears 5 times, k equal to 2 appears 7 times, and there is no order there. Then, given a set of nk numbers, we know a sequences of k numbers up to reordering. In addition, when one knows the sequences of k numbers, the ordered sequences of k numbers, in order to recover the sequences of m numbers, we have to give a sign to each k in order to recover the m. Then, the degeneracy that we are looking for is coming from 2 terms. I mean, given a list of nk numbers, the degeneracy is given by 2 terms. The first term is just a reordering factor, how many times different reorderings that I can find. And the second term is just this sign assignment to the k levels in order to obtain the m levels, but verifying the projection constraint, but which is that the sum of m levels has to be equal to 0. And these factors account for how many different ways I have to put signs to the k levels in order to recover the m levels, verifying always the projection constraint. Then this is the combinatorial problem that we want to solve. And the steps that we want to follow is, first of all, I will try to find these nk levels. And when I find it, I will try to find how many signs assignment I can make. Step one, I want to find the nk levels, and I will show this will be equivalent to obtain a black hole area spectrum, a characterization of the black hole area spectrum. We know that the.
It's a function of A.
Yes, yes. For each fixed value of area, I want to find all the sets of nk levels compatible.
And you really talk about fixed area, or fixed area modulo and delta? Because otherwise there would be many areas for which there would be no.
In this way, it's exact. I don't need the delta parameter. This is, I am using discrete analysis, and I will not use this delta parameter.
Okay. So there's some A for which there's no NK.
Yes, of course. Okay. So this will be a characterization of the black hole spectrum. No, for which A I have solution.
Okay. So you are.
Then this is the usual black hole area spectrum, the values of the area operator. And from here is a trivial fact that decomposing this number in in the prime factor decomposition, I can take out from the square root the squares and remain inside the square root only the numbers without square. I mean, I can express this number in general terms in this way, where this k are positive internal numbers or non-negative internal numbers, and this pi, this p, is are square free numbers. Then every number in the black hole spectrum can be written as the linear combination of the square root of square free numbers. Then the nk labels that we are looking for verify this equation. Given a value of area in this way, the nk labels verify this equation, and this is the unknowns that I am looking for. And in the other hand, I can apply this argument also to this number. I can decompose this number in prime factor decompositions and take out from the square root the squares, and this number always will be proportional to an integer time the square root of a square free number. And I would like to know, given a k, which square free number appear here and with which y. In other words, the same question is, given a square free number, which pairs of k and y can verify this equation? I can consider this equation with unknowns k and y for a given p, and this is a equation which is very well known, it's known in number theory. This has even a name, it's called the Pell equation, and the solution are well known. And given a square free number, I can find the solution for k and y of these equations, and this is in the books, where this I is referring to the square free number in particular, and this index m is referring to the different solution of the Pell equation, because there are infinite solutions to the Pell equations. Given as a square free number, there are infinite k and y that verify that equation. And
there's an infinite set.
Yes, for all square free numbers.
Can you justify that for there's always an infinite set? Or it's very technical.
It's a little bit technical, but the point is that when we find the elementary solution, which is the solution with the lower k and y, the other solutions can be obtained just with taking some powers of this elementary solution, and the powers are integer numbers, and then you can find always numbers verifying this. It's a little tricky to make a demonstration, a proof. Then, given the solutions to the Pell equation, I can substitute here these numbers for y times the corresponding square free number, and this equation is written in that way. This part is in that way, and this is just the area and value that I am considering, and this is the equation that I will want to solve for these nk numbers. I mean, given as area and value, I want to solve the nk numbers compatible with this equation. Here there are several equations. No, sorry, there are one equation. This is a summing of over all the square free numbers in the area spectrum. And due to the fact that the square root of the square free numbers, these numbers, are linearly independent over the integers, this can be decoupled in a set of decoupled Diophantine equation. Then what I have here is a set of decoupled Diophantine equations. I have the number of equations is equal to the numbers of square free numbers appearing in the area eigenvalue that I have considered. And I can just solve these linear Diophantine equations in order to find the k numbers.
I mean, something. Why are the p i's in the Pell equation the same as the p i's that you had in the upper equation on the right hand side? I mean, at first you write something in terms of square free numbers, and then you write the square root k plus 1 square minus 1 as in terms of the square
root of numbers.
And they know that they're, can they be different or something?
But if you don't have the same square free numbers in one side and the other side, there are no solutions to this equation. In order to find a non-zero solution, we have to find in these factors the same square free numbers that in the other side. I mean, what you have fixed is the REFM value, and then you want to find all the NK and K numbers verifying this equation. But obviously, I only will put in this part of the equality the case which involves by the square by the equation a p that are in the other side. If not, then solving this set of Diophantine linear equations, I will find this the number that I'm looking for. And if there are no solutions to these equations, just this number doesn't belong to the area spectrum. If I don't find any solutions for these NK numbers, this the given area value doesn't belong to the area spectrum value. This way is a characterization of the black hole area spectrum. The second step is once I have these NK numbers, I would like to find all the distributions of signs over the sequences given by the NK numbers in such a way that the projection constraint is verified. I remember that K is 2 times the absolute value of M, then assigning signs to K, I reproduce the M's, and I want to find how many different ways of assigning signs to these numbers reproducing the projection constraints there are. This is again a known problem in number theory, and this is called a partition problem. And this is it's just the problem that if I have a set of elements, how many different ways of split these sets into disjoint sets I have in such a way that the sum of the elements of each set are the same. And this problem is solved in the literature, and the solution is given by this expression, where this n is given by this. That's all. And then I have the two ingredients that I need. Then, putting the reorderings of these nk levels and the sign degeneracy, I will obtain the total degeneracy, and computing this, I will obtain this plot.
So this Diophantine equation, you do it numerically or you make an
In order to find this plot?
Yeah, to solve the
Yes. We use mathematics, for example. And we solve the equation for each value of area from 0 until.
But it's just much, much, much faster than.
Yes, much, much faster. We are able to much faster. A factor maybe 50 or something like this. Okay. We can reach areas around 1,000 Planck areas. And this way we obtain this. Each of these points are referring to a particular area and value, and this is the degeneracy, the other point. And we'll see this particular pattern where there are some areas and values for which the degeneracy is really high, and these areas and values are evenly spaced, and the space is 2.4 Planck areas. And between these points, there are another areas and values with degeneracy much less than the other one, some orders of magnitude less than the other one. And when we sum for areas smaller or equal than the one considered to obtain the real number of microstates, we reproduce the star-like behavior that Corici, Diaz-Polo, and Fernandez Borja have.
The spacing of the steps they had was regular, but also the size. So you maintain, of course, the linear.
In order to take the entropy, I have to take logarithm, and this exponential growing becomes in a linear growing. And then I recover exactly the same result that my colleagues follow.
So what happens if you go to higher areas, let us say more than 500? What happens to the width and the profile? Is it preserved?
This is a very interesting question, and this is the point that I mentioned before. This effect is maintained for macroscopic in the large area regime, and I will talk a little about in the next slides. I don't know the answer. The next step is that once we have solved this combinatorial problem with exact techniques coming from number theory, the next step was done by Barbero and Villasenor, very recently, and was to obtain generating functions for each part of this combinatorial problem. And what they found was that they were able to find generating functions for this combinatorial problem, and for each part of it, and for the global result also. And these generating functions are very convenient analytical expressions, are closed expressions for the degeneracy, and they are really convenient for starting asymptotical expansion in the large area regime. And this is a very hard point, because the asymptotical expansion of these expressions is not trivial at all. And this is a work in progress that we all are trying to solve right now. We are concentrating in it. And as an example, let me show you, for instance, the generating function to obtain the sign degeneracy. This is just this function. And this function, the coefficient of the zero order term in the Laurent expansion of this function is just this number, and this coefficient can be computed using a complex analysis, and is just given by this expression. This is not exactly the same expression that they put before for this problem, but it's totally equivalent. It's an integral version of the other expression.
Where is small n here?
Sorry?
Small n.
The number of functions. The number of functions that we have.
But that should let by. Right?
Yes, but we know the number of functions that there are for each area because we have solved the combinatorial problem before. Then solving the Bell equation and this stuff, we know exactly for each area which configuration of k levels are compatible, and for each one we can compute the degeneracy in that way. Then with these methods we have verified that this stack like spectrum in the entropy area relation is there for small black holes, and we have obtained closed expression for the degeneracy. And the next step, the main point of my talk, is trying to recover this expression from a new perspective. And I will talk about it. Okay, first of all, the motivation of this new perspective, this new approach, is the first one is coming from the Karlip ideas of that there is an underlying conformal symmetry driving the exponential growing of the number of states of a horizon, independently of the particular details of the quantum gravity theory considered. Another motivation is given by the works of Witten, where they establish the connection between the Hilbert space of a generally covariant theory and the conformal and the space of conformal blocks of a conformally covariant theory. They establish this relation, and this is the relation that we want to use in order to compute the black hole entropy from a conformal theory perspective, because the Chesaimon theory is a particular example of general covariant theory. And then there is an analogous conformal invariant theory, which space of conformal blocks are in connection with the space of the Hilbert space of the Chesaimon theory. But this idea is not new at all. This idea was proposed 10 years ago by Cole and Majumdar. And what they did is using the known connection of the SU2 Chesaimon theory and SU2 Westrubino-Witten model, which is an example of a conformative theory. And they proposed that the horizon of the black hole is described by a SU1 Chesaimon theory. And they connect, use the Witten relation between the Hilbert space of this theory and the number of the space of conformal blocks of this other theory in order to do the counting. And they count the number of conformal blocks of this theory. And this number is computed using conformal field theory techniques, using the fusion rules. And this number np for a given set of functions p, labeled by g1, g2, g3, and gp, is given by this expression, where these numbers are called the fusion numbers, are obtained using the fusion rules, and the fusion rules and the fusion numbers are the multiplicity of the R irreducible representation in the expansion of the tensor product of two irreducible representations.
But yes. Does it count the another pair or the ordered pair?
Sorry?
Does it count? I mean, in your counting, you were ordering the objects. So this guy will not count the ordered pair.
This guy just make this. The Hilbert space of the Chern-Simons theory is equivalent to the space of conformal blocks of this theory, and let's compute the number of conformal blocks. This is what they did, and that's all. And they obtain from this number the entropy. And the problem is that in loop quantum gravity, the horizon degrees of freedom are described by a U1 Chern-Simons theory and not by a SU2 Chern-Simons theory. And in particular, there is no U1 Westerminovitter model.
Wouldn't one
expect
that that's even simpler to treat?
But there is no U1 Westerminovitter model. There is no Westerminovitter model for abelian groups. Mm. Then these connections can be applied in this way to in the case of U1 group.
But as far as I recall, in this whole Mazumdar paper, they were trying to claim that this is the way LQG entropy should be computed.
Excuse me? Sorry, can
I... In their paper, like, weren't they claiming that unless we do the SU2, unless we do the SU2 case, we don't know what is the actual LQG entropy?
I couldn't listen the last part because the last.
I want to understand because like there are many papers on that line,
yes,
from Paul Mazumdar school of thought, which try to claim that there is the actual way of doing the LQG entropy calculation. So what is the?
But the point is that the horizon degrees of freedom are not described by the SU2 theory, but a U1 theory. In the original paper of Mazumdar, but look at that this paper is previous to the Astekar by Krasnov and Morici paper. And in this paper, Kaul and Mazumdar claims that the author says that you can use the SU2 Chern-Simons theory. And this is not correct. The theory describing the horizon degrees of freedom is a U1 Chern-Simons theory and not a SU2. And in this way, this is a very nice connection, but it's not computing the degrees of freedom of the loop quantum gravity isolated horizon approach.
But there's another subtlety, no? I mean, in the previous calculation, you decided to count ordered pair.
Yes, yes.
For just because, you know, maybe Abai says so. I mean, the justification is very weak for why this counting. So here, if you count the number of conformal blocks, that's going to be different because you're going to average over, you know, there's going to be a procedure of identification. J1, J2 here is just the same state as J2, J1.
You are right.
A symmetrized version of the counting.
It's you are right in this at this point, but okay.
There's a big debate in the literature whether you should count the ordered pair versus the,
yes,
you know, the, and the physics of which one you choose is not well.
Okay, maybe. The point is that in the Astekar work, they ordered the punctures. They say that there are orders, and I am just trying to reproduce this concept. I am not asking about if this claim is appropriate or not. I am just taking the Astekar results and trying to compute in another way. In fact, okay, at this point, this is not the same result as the combinatorial problem. They are using the SU2 Chern-Simons theory. I will do it in another way using the U1 group, and I will consider the order, and I will reproduce the same result as before. But I'm not asking if this order is appropriate or not. I am just taking these results and trying to work with them. Then, the question that we say is how to account for the real U1 degrees of freedom of the horizon. And the idea behind this is trying to use the geometry symmetry reductions that is imposed by the horizon. And then what we have on the horizon, let me show the general idea. What we have is we have on the horizon is the U1 Simon series, and I would like to relate this with a U1 Quest 2 millimeter model, but this model doesn't exist. And then what I have to say, I have to do is try to remember where this U1 group is coming from. And in particular, this one U group is coming from. I showed this before. Because the horizon constraints impose that the SU2 degrees of freedom of the bulk are reduced on the horizon to this U1 degrees of freedom. And then this U1 group is coming from the reduction of the symmetry because the horizon to the one SU2 group. The same, in that sense, this SU2 freedom of the bulk, the SU2 connection, are reduced to a U1 connection, and these U1 connections give you the U1 Tefeimo theory.
So,
but
when you say U1 Wisdom in the written doesn't exist, I mean, there's an analogous to what would be U1 Wisdom in the written, which is just a particle on a compactifying a circle of a given radius. And when you look at the conformal blocks of that guys, they're exactly the same thing in the states of Chern Simon. So there's this, it was established, I think, even before we can meet that. So there's a whole literature on this connection between conformal blocks of compactified U1, stream, if you want, and states of Chern Simon.
As long as I knew, there is no U1 with combinatorial theory. Maybe there is, you can talk. You can give me the reference after, later, but as long as 10 minutes. Then, what we want to do is try to keep for a moment the SU2 connection, the SU2 gate freedom, and construct the Chern-Simon theory SU2 for a moment, keeping in mind that the real symmetry is not SU1, but is a subset of the states given by the U1 symmetry. And in this point, we can make the analogy with the Westphalian SU2. But we have now to impose some conditions in order to restrict the symmetry here in the same fashion that we did here, in order to recover the real degrees of freedom. And I will ask if there is any connection between this reduced symmetry, reduced theory, and this U1 connection. This is what I will try to do. Then let me summarize how is the symmetry reduction on the bulk. In general terms, if we have a fiber bundle P over one manifold sigma with a structural group G with connection omega, and we have a H subgroup of this group G, and the homomorphisms that is embedding the subgroup in the group induce a Pavel reduction in the Fourier bundle to this Fourier bundle to this other one with the same manifold and with this group structural group, the subgroup H, with a reduced connection, and this is the way, this is what happens in the bulk if you look at gravity. In our case, J is SU2 and H is U1. But this T is the invariant torus of SU2, the invariant torus, which is given by the diagonal matrices in this way. And we know that the U1 group is isomorphic to this torus invariant of SU2. I mean, we can see U1 group as a inside of SU2, and the homomorphisms that embed U1 in SU2 are, in general, this lambda sub k homomorphisms, which take a U1 element and gives you a diagonal matrices of the torus invariant, where k is a non-negative, is a integer number. But if we take into account the action of the Bayer group, we only have to take one representative of each of the equivalent class of the action of the Bayer group, and this is just take k non-negative. This is the homomorphism that restrict the symmetry in the bulk. And let's go to our case. In our case, we want to make this symmetry reduction locally, and it's punctured. In each puncture, we have a representation J of the irreducible representation of the SU2 group. And we know that this irreducible representation can be expressed as a direct sum of 2J plus 1 U1 irreducible representations in that way. And in order to reduce to the human group, one can just pick up one of these irreducible representations. But we know before, we saw before that in order to be consistent with the embedding of U1 and SU2, this homomorphism, we cannot differentiate signs. And then an if pointer, we will take the direct sum of two U1 irreducible representations with label plus and minus m, which give us a reducible U1 representation. Then we will consider this representation, the reducible ones, as the instead of the irreducible ones, as the consequence of the reduction from the SU2. And this is just another way to use precisely the homomorphies that we saw in the previous slides. Then we will use this homomorphies of U1 into SU2 in order to restrict the symmetry. And in order, in terms of this symmetry reduction, let me show how compute the number of conformal blocks. But first of all, let me remember how to do in the SU2 case. In the SU2 case, and as I showed before, as we saw before, the number of conformal blocks with p punctures is given for in terms of these numbers, where these numbers are the Fuchsian numbers. And in truth, what is given you this number is the multiplicity of the gauge invariant j equals 0 appearing in the tensor product of all these j representations. I mean, this mp is giving you how many ways of obtaining the gauge invariant g equals 0 representation you have combining all the representations. Then, what the people do is use the very useful Berlinde formula in order to compute these Fuchsian numbers and introduce here in order to find the number of conformal blocks. But we can rewrite this number using the theory of characters because the characters also verify the Fuchsian rules. And the characters has a very nice property that they are orthonormal with respect to the usual scalar product in SU2. Then, using this, it's very easy to obtain the multiplicity of the j equals 0 representation just projecting the product of characters of all the representation over the gauge invariant j equals 0 representation. This is an alternative way of obtaining the same expression. In the case of U1, the characters that we are using are given by the homomorphies and are these ones.
Sorry, I'm a bit lost. I mean, the thing you want to do is to count the n for the conformal blocks.
N, right? Yes.
So there, you're not going to get this character formula for SU2. You're going to get something which involves quantum groups.
But I can reproduce the.
So the formula computes the fusion rule not for usual SU2, but for the quantum group SU2.
What I know is that if you compute this using the Berlinde formula in the fashion that Kaula and Majunda did, you have an expression, I can reproduce the same expression just using this
character. What I'm saying is that the Vesumino-Witten model have a notion of a level, which is like the causing of chance sign.
Yes.
So everything depends on this level. Yeah. If you take this level to infinity, then you're right. These numbers are just, you know, the things. If the level is not, you know, if the level is finite, then what you should work with is not with the usual SU2 group, but with the quantum group. And the quantum group has a parameter q, which is exponential I times this level.
Mm-hmm. That's the. Then maybe this point is because in this expression we are taking a height.
Yeah, but in the Blackwell entropy, the level is essentially the area.
Yes, yes.
So.
Okay, then this is valid for large areas.
Well, for infinite areas.
For infinite, hopefully.
Well, I mean, for infinite level. No, not
this infinite. This is exactly what Majunda and Kaul use in the
well,
case of.
Maybe, but it doesn't mean that it's correct.
Yes, yes. I know.
What you call the Verlinde formula, you know, is much more complicated than that. if you have a non-zero, a non-infinite level.
Okay.
Right. It's
we'll consider this.
You need quantum groups.
Then we are using these characters, and we can repeat this the same. Just given a K list, we have to project the product of the characters involved in the K representations over the trivial, in this case, not the U1, not the SU2 gauge invariant, but the U1 gauge invariant representation. And this can be seen as an implementation in this context of the projection constraint that we saw before. And taking into account the usual scalar product of U1, the projection that we are looking for is this one. This is the expression that we arrive in order for the conformal blocks of the symmetry reduced SU2 theory. And in order to compare with the other result, let me situate the physical problem in a quick way. We have the SU1 Feynman theory on the horizon, and we have some constraint. One constraint is the area constraint that constrains the Hilbert phase of this theory. The area spectrum is driven by loop quantum gravity black hole spectrum, which gives you a list of J levels. And using the Domagala-Lewandowski scheme that we see before, these J levels are related with M levels, and that way, and the M levels are in correspondence with the Akai list and K list. And the isolated horizon boundary conditions impose these levels, relate these levels with the U1 Tessimus levels, and then this U1 Tessimus gives you the Hilbert space with this constraint. At the end of the day, the only freedom that the U1 Tessimus theory has is if you put this as an input, is the sign assignment to these levels.
Something missing in this picture, which is the coupling constants of transignments. Because the state of space.
This is this one.
And the state of space depends largely especially on this coupling constant. So
in this one. Then, when we have this degeneracy from here, we have to include the reorderings coming from the specific way of compute the black hole spectrum in loop quantum gravity. And when I add this with this, I obtain the entropy. But I have to remember that in the Domagala-Lewandowski scheme, I have to sum up for areas smaller or equal than the other one. And in this way, I obtain the entropy. Then all this stuff of here is coming from the loop quantum gravity features. And this stuff from here is coming from the loop quantum gravity features. And this is the exit of the Chern-Simons theory. Then this is the point that I have to compare with the Westrum-Inovitan analogy. And if I remember you the expression for this out was just the sign assignments, and this is the same result that I obtained in the Westrum-Inovitan case. And another interesting thing that I want to show is that as we saw, the degeneracy has two factors. These factors coming from the Chern-Simons theory, and these factors coming from the reordering, or if you want, from the particular features of the loop quantum gravity. And I can make a plot of this factor independently from this factor. And these plots are the two. When I combine the two, I obtain the plot that I showed previously. But I see this interesting thing is that the part coming from the Chern-Simons theory has just a exponentially growing of states with area. I mean, the contribution coming from Chern-Simons theory or Westrum-Inovitan in this case gives just a linear behavior of the entropy with area with a logarithm correction, also is here. And the contribution coming from loop quantum gravity, in particular the reordering degeneracy, gives you this particular band structure that we saw before. Then this quasi-equidistant spectrum is coming from the reordering factor, I mean from the specific features of loop quantum gravity. Then
the effective emergency parameter is different.
The what?
The emergency parameter, there's an exponential growth.
Yes.
So there's an exponent here, which is the Emirdi parameter.
Yes. Yes.
So the Emirdi parameter is different. Or is it the same? It's not the same.
The combination gives you the correct Emirdi parameter.
But the one on the left, the question is the one on the left different from the one on the right?
Yes, it is. The combination, when you take this times this, you obtain the correct Emirdi parameter. The correct.
Well, I mean, you get here. Yeah. The correct for the counting you're looking. I mean.
Yes, yes. The correct for the.
If you decide that the right counting is the counting of blocks, you will get this one.
Sure.
Which is
different from the Hamming is here. Mm-hmm. It is different. If I combine the fashion of the Aztec alpha for example of paper, I obtain the Meissner Emirdi parameter, but if not, I will obtain this one separately. And I am concluding that now.
Can we please conclude it?
Conclusion is that we propose a specific way of implementing the Mitten's analogy in the framework of black hole entropy low quantum gravity. This result seems to indicate that this analogy is working in this case, in the standard approach of black hole entropy low quantum gravity. We consider that this is a motivation for the search of a deeper relation between black hole entropy and conformal theory, trying to look for a conformal theory that constructs explicitly a conformal theory that is living there, because we just see the relation between both. But this is a motivation to look for a most deeper relation, and this will be very interesting because if we obtain this more deeper relation, we can use the extremely powerful techniques coming from conformal field theory in the study of black hole entropy and even in black hole radiation. And the picture is consistent with the physical problem. The physical problem means the standard approach coming from the Aztecal papers. And additionally, it is consistent with the Carli idea that there is a conformal symmetry driving the linear behavior of the entropy, and with some additional effects at the Planck scale coming from the particular features of the quantum theory that we are using. And this is all what I wanted to say. Thank you.
So maybe if you were to drop this ordering counting, you would not count the ordering of the labels. Do you still get the right entropy and the large area limit?
Yes, even in the small
area.
If you drop the reordering, you drop this factor, and you obtain just.
You still get the area, some different in the parameter, as you say. And,
yes.
And
you just obtain this plot. This plot is true in that case. This
and
case.
Without
you cannot observe. You will not observe this discrete phenomenon, and you will obtain a different.
Can you explain a bit more, this Carli stuff? So in the next slide, you mentioned this Carli result. So can you be more specific?
Yes, Carli. In the papers of Carli, you can see that they claim that in a very different quantum gravity approaches, they always obtain the same entropy higher relation, the linear entropy higher relation, and
But the counting, let's say, what is counting, Carli, correct me if I'm wrong, is counting the number of states of some conformal field theory. So can you tell me what is the idea of Carli there?
Carli is
the entropy would be what?
He's finding, he finds the Virasoro algebra of the generators of duration, and he claims for the Carli formulas of the entropy of a conformal theory, and he used the Carli formula.
But that means that what Carli is proposing is that he wants to count for the black hole states, he wants to count the states of some conformal field theory.
Yes.
Okay. But this is very different from the counting you're doing here, which you're counting here is the number of conformal blocks. And the number of conformal blocks is not the number of states of a CFT. It's right. So how do you hope these two things to match up together? What are you looking for exactly?
What we are looking for is just what I showed that it is just that counting the number of conformal blocks.
Okay. So in what sense is that related to counting psi?
In the sense that we are using obtaining the entropy just from conformal invariant theory, and just trying to study the internal properties of this conformal invariant theory.
Yeah, but if you were computing the central charge of your, you know, Vesuminum with a new one theory, you will find it's one, not so.
But we are using this conformal field theory.
So I agree that there's some conformal field theory, but you know, and Karlip is proposing something also with the conformal field theory, but it doesn't mean that these two ideas overlap in any obvious manner.
Okay, maybe.
The central charge of the conformal field theory you're looking at is one plus small quantum correction, whereas the conformal field theory that Karlip is looking at is, you know, the area is macroscopic. So they are very different conformal field theories.
But what we obtain in this case is not one plus some correction, it's just proportional to the area.
Yeah, because you're counting not the number of states of the CFT, you're counting the number of conformal blocks of the CFT, which is like counting the number of correlation functions of the CFT,
yes,
which is very different from the number of states. So
maybe this is a part of this form, which is a look for a more deeper motivation for more deeper connection of this stuff.
Any other comments?
Actually, I want to go back to the comment which you made regarding the isolated horizon approximation. And you mentioned that we don't know whether this discretization is an artifact of some particular assumption breaking. So how do we know that now? Like in the last 2 years, like has there been some effort to understand like whether the approximations are valid or like we are still at the same stage where the Corrigi is
not get lost.
So what I want to understand is that there were some approximations made.
Yes.
In the calculation.
In the Meissner work?
No, not only in the Meissner work, but the first paper of the discretization by Corrigi et al.
Yes.
And so you mentioned that we don't know whether this effect of discretization is an artifact of some approximation being breaking down.
But let me go in order to understand the question. This slide, the counting was exact. I mean, was counting one per one all the configuration compatible with the macroscopy constraints. So in this sense was exact. But okay, always is interesting to compute it from a different perspective in order to check if they are.
Yeah. I don't think that's what he's asking.
What I like, okay, maybe you can rephrase.
He's asking something about when you answer to one question he was asking before. You were saying that this description correctly, you were saying correctly that this description of Ashteka, etc., is kinematical, doesn't take into account any dynamic or, you know, entity, and it ignores, for instance, you know, Hawking radiation. So he was asking about, okay, so it means it's an approximate description. You know, what are the status of, where do we know exactly when this approximation phase or not? Is there any progress in that?
About the time evolution? Of course not. The only thing that all this is totally kinematic, and this is in the same fashion of the Aztec algorithm. This is just a refinement in the counting process of the Aztec algorithm of work.
And my second question is like this new perspective that you have to compute the same is that like even with that we cannot go to higher areas. I understand like numerically it is very difficult, and then this what you had from
maybe this is a way.
Okay.
This result is very recent. It are even not published, and we are working more in it. And this is trying to exploit this alternative way is the next work.
Thank you, Ivan. Thank you.